All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a pretty fascinating and really significant case in environmental law, Scott v. City of Hammond, Indiana. Especially for those of you out there, law students who are maybe wrestling with Clean Water Act stuff, this is one you gotta know. And we're gonna look at how this case really kind of highlights the balance and sometimes the tension between federal oversight and state responsibility when it comes to protecting our water. And
Absolutely.
importantly, how citizens can actually step in and play a role when that balance gets kind of out of whack.
It's a great case. It really does kind of lay out the responsibilities of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, when states just aren't following through on their end of the bargain when it comes to controlling
Oh,
pollution.
yeah.
And a big part of that is this really interesting legal concept called constructive submission.
Yeah, so let's set the stage here a little bit. It's 1980, and we've got beaches near Chicago closing down because raw sewage is flowing into Lake Michigan.
Yikes.
Not good. I mean, this is a public health crisis.
For sure.
And this is what really motivated a guy named William Scott to take legal action. Now, he didn't just sue the obvious, polluters, the city of Hammond and the Hammond-Munster Sanitary District. He also went after the EPA.
Interesting.
So, what were his main arguments against the federal agency? What was he saying the EPA wasn't doing?
So he had two primary arguments. The first was that the EPA had just totally failed to establish what we call total maximum daily loads, or as we call them in the biz, TMDLs, for the pollutants that were just flowing into the lake, specifically all that raw sewage. Now, TMDLs, they're basically like pollution budgets, right, for a specific water body. And they say, okay, this is the max amount of this pollutant that can be in this water without messing everything up, without harming the water quality. And the Clean Water Act had this deadline, right? 1979, for states to come up with these TMDLs. And Scott was pointing out, hey, both Indiana and Illinois, they blew right past that deadline.
So the deadline came and went and nothing happened. What was his second beef with the EPA?
His second argument was that the EPA just wasn't doing enough to make sure the existing water quality standards were strong enough to protect public health, especially for all the nasty stuff that you find in fecal matter, the viruses, the bacteria, all that. He said, look, these standards are just not cutting it, given how dangerous this stuff is to people.
So we got a clear pollution problem, missed deadlines, a citizen basically saying, "Hey, EPA, you're dropping the ball."
Right.
So what happened when this case went to court?
Well, initially, the district court actually dismissed all of Scott's claims against the EPA.
Really?
Yeah, they said the EPA hadn't failed in any duty that was specifically required of them. But Scott, being Scott, he appealed the decision, of course, to the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And that's where things got interesting.
So the appellate level, right, where things get a little more nuanced.
For sure. That's where the details matter.
So the Seventh Circuit disagreed with the lower court, at least partially. What was the kind of the central legal question that they really were grappling with that led to that different conclusion?
The big question was whether the Clean Water Act actually forces the EPA to act when states don't hand in those TMDLs by the deadline. And the legal term for that is non-discretionary duty, which basically means the EPA's got to do something. They don't have a choice in the matter once certain conditions are met. So the court was saying, okay, is the EPA required to step in when states don't do their job on these TMDLs? Or can they just sit around and wait forever? And this is where this idea of constructive submission becomes super important.
Constructive submission. It sounds like something, you'd only hear in a law school classroom. Break that down for us. What does that actually mean in the real world in this case?
Sure. So the Seventh Circuit was basically saying that if a state keeps putting off submitting those TMDLs for so long that it's obvious they're never going to do it, then legally speaking, that's the same as them submitting nothing. Like if you ask someone to give you a report by Friday and they just keep ignoring you for months, you'd figure they're not going to do it. So it's like they submitted an empty report. So if the state's just not doing anything, if that's considered them submitting nothing, what did the EPA have to do? Well, once that's happened, the EPA has to either approve or disapprove it. And here's the kicker. If they disapprove, which of course they would, then they have to create their own TMDLs for that water body. And the court was really clear that Congress, when they passed the Clean Water Act, they wanted to control pollution. They weren't going to let some state just decide not to do anything and mess that up. The court even said, and this is a great quote, "We cannot allow the state's refusal to act to defeat the intent of Congress that TMDLs be established promptly."
I love those quotes. It really kind of drives home the point that the law is there to do something, you know, to have teeth.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned earlier that there's a specific way that citizens can actually challenge the EPA's inaction in a situation like this. Can you talk a little more about that legal pathway?
Yeah, this is really important for understanding environmental law and how citizens can make a difference. So typically, the Clean Water Act itself doesn't let you sue directly over the specifics of a state's water quality standards.
Okay.
Or exactly how they came up with them.
Right.
But the court in Scott pointed to the Administrative Procedure Act, the APA, as a different route. The APA is basically the rule book for how federal agencies have to operate. And it lets citizens challenge an agency if they're doing something wrong, or in this case, not doing something they should be doing. If they're being arbitrary, capricious, and abusive discretion, or otherwise not in accordance with law.
Yeah.
So Scott wasn't suing over the lack of pollution limits directly, but he was saying the EPA's just sitting there watching the states do nothing is breaking the APA.
That's interesting. So instead of going after the environmental standard, he went after the process, the fact that the EPA was...
Exactly. That's the smart move.
That's really interesting. So the APA is like a backstop, like an accountability measure to make sure these agencies are doing their job.
It is.
So the Seventh Circuit sent the case back down to the district court. What instructions or guidelines did they give to help determine if this constructive submission thing had actually happened?
They gave him a three-factor test.
Okay.
First, how long has the state been blowing off the TMDLs?
Right.
Second, does it look like they're refusing to do anything at all? Oh. And third, did they ignore the deadlines in this case, that 1979 deadline?
Right, right.
Which was a big deal.
So it's not just the little delay.
No.
It's got to be something that looks intentional.
Exactly.
Like they're dodging their responsibilities.
Right. Especially with that clear deadline Congress gave them.
Right. So the court was telling the lower court, look at the whole picture.
Yep.
How long, why, and did they totally ignore the law?
Yep.
Then you can decide if this was really constructive submission.
Right, which would make the EPA do something.
This ruling feels like it has some pretty big implications, not just for Lake Michigan, but for environmental regulations everywhere and for citizens' power to hold the government accountable.
Absolutely. This Scott v. City of Hammond case is a landmark decision.
Yeah.
It set a huge precedent, saying the EPA can't just watch while states ignore the Clean Water Act.
Right.
And the constructive submission idea, that's a powerful tool to make the EPA act when states are just doing nothing. It gives citizens more power to make sure the Clean Water Act actually works.
Right.
Cleaner, healthier water for everyone.
Right.
And what's really cool is that the court kind of read between the lines of the law.
Yeah.
Congress wanted action by that deadline.
Hmm.
The court wasn't going to let bureaucracy stop that from happening.
So it shows how the courts can step in and make sure regulations actually have some teeth.
Absolutely.
So for all you law students out there, what are the big things to take away from this case? What makes it so important to understand as you dig deeper into environmental law?
Scott v. City of Hammond is like a masterclass in a few key areas.
Okay.
First, it really shows how complicated the relationship between state and federal authorities can be when it comes to environmental protection.
Right.
Who's responsible for what?
Right.
Second, it's a perfect example of how courts look at the words of a law and figure out what Congress really meant when they wrote it.
Okay.
In this case, they wanted clean water, no matter what. And most importantly, it shows how legal ideas, like constructive submission, can give citizens the power to hold the government accountable when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
It's a real-world example of how you can use legal principles to actually protect the environment.
So basically, Scott v. City of Hammond and this idea of constructive submission, they both tell us that sometimes doing nothing is just as important, legally speaking, as doing something.
Exactly.
Especially when it comes to the environment.
It means that if a state just won't do what they're supposed to do, like submit those pollution control plans, the law sees that as them making a choice. And it triggers the EPA to step in and take over. It's like a recipe where you absolutely have to add a certain ingredient.
Right.
You can't just decide to leave it out.
And that brings us to our final thought for today, especially for those future lawyers out there. Think about this. When does not doing something, especially in the legal world, actually become the same as doing something? Go beyond environmental law. Are there other areas of law where this idea of constructive submission might apply?
That's a good one.
It's a really interesting question to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive today.